This is continuing with Lafleur on 30th August 76. So your PhD thesis was in 47 or 48,
yes.
And can be found in the Bulletin Astronomique of the Paris Observatory.
That's
right. Did you ever cooperate with the people at the École Normale Supérieure?
In the beginning, yes.
In some but projects. Which kind of projects?
In collaborating, giving discussion on mainly on the instruments and on the possibility of solar emission. I had ideas at that time, but I didn't push them very, very long.
And there was also a partial solar eclipse in April 49.
In April 49.
Yeah, can you tell me about that?
Let me see. I don't think I did any work on the partial solar eclipse.
Well, it's Lafleur, Michard, Steinberg, and Zissler.
And Zissler.
And that Comprendu.
Maybe, yes. Partial eclipse. I did in Carr, yes. That's a partial solar eclipse, yes. I delivered a little work with all those colleagues about the observation on my instrument of that.
So you were at Meudon itself?
Yes, I was. The instrument was always in Meudon.
Right, but then you were part of a team that went to worked on the Khartoum eclipse,
I think.
That's it. That was in February 52.
That's it. I went in Khartoum with a light instrument built on purpose to observe that eclipse.
Right.
And as far as I remember, I wrote a paper in the compte-rendu of the Académie des Sciences to say that during the full eclipse, totality, there was perhaps about 18 or 19% less emission than when the moon was not there.
Right. And this was at... You had 550 and 255 megahertz.
That's it, because in between, I perfected my instrument, putting in focus two kinds of aerials. One on 55 centimeters and at right angles, another one at 1.22.
I see.
You see, with an instrument built on purpose by myself.
Now, what did you learn from that eclipse?
That eclipse, that only a part of the surface of the sun was emitting radio. At that time, we didn't know really what was the shape of the solar of the radio sun
at meter wavelengths.
At meter wavelengths,
right?
And you can see in literature that they gave the temperature of the sun of something about 500,000 degrees, confined in the disk, right, the visual disk.
Assuming that it was the same size.
The same size.
Right.
See, everyone spoke of that. But in the eclipse, it was easy to see that when the sun was covered, it emits anyhow.
Right.
That was the interesting thing I extract from my journey in Khartoum.
I see.
But I saw something more. As my radio instrument was working by itself, I had the opportunity of looking deeply, intensely to a solar eclipse, beautiful.
Yeah.
And when I saw the totality, the first idea was, it is absolutely not the same as that the photographs give. The corona is not a corona.
I see.
That is a photographic, a purely photographic phenomenon. What you see, it's streamers coming from the sun,
right,
and with in many details, that you cannot see.
Right, you don't see a smooth sort of thing like you see in photographs.
Like a corona.
Right.
It's the word corona has been given to the photographic phenomenon, but the sun, as it is not a corona, it's a flower, it's anything but a
right.
geometric corona.
Yeah, yeah.
And it gave me the first idea for my last work in astronomy, the dimmed photographs. The first of it, it was expressed in 1961, I think the first good photography of a solar eclipse.
Now, what did you do differently now?
I put in focus of the astronomy a rotating van, diminishing the brightness near the limb, and letting all the light out.
I see.
And it gave a beautiful photograph for the moment. And people like Donald Mansell said, it's beautiful, there's nothing to do, and so on. Hmm. And I sent him all my photographs. There was a congress in Rome on the sun. They sent a telegram, send us the photograph as fast as you can, and so on. And you can see the photograph of that eclipse in in the yearbook, McGraw-Hill yearbook.
Oh yes, right.
For the year 62 or 61, 62.
I see. Okay, I'll have to look that up.
Topics of the year. And you'll see the first photograph of an eclipse really.
So as it looks to the eye, right.
See?
Now, you also went to an eclipse expedition in Sweden, I believe, in June 54.
June 54, I took the same instrument as in Khartoum. I put it at a different inclination in Sweden, in Öland, and I observed also the same thing as in Khartoum, not only a percentage of the energy that was masked by the moon. It was not the same as in Khartoum, because the corona was not the same
right.
at the moment. And I tried also the photographic process, but the clouds were there.
Ah, so yes.
I had to wait until 61 to give the photographic observation of the sun.
Now, you mentioned the 1952 IRSI meeting in Sydney.
Yes, and then
can you tell me what were the important things about that meeting that you learned?
In Sydney, I was very much impressed with the Bolton work on radio sources.
Using the Seacliff interferometer?
No. The plain dish on the Dover Heights.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It was that in that time.
But
he had also an interferometer.
But it was a Seacliff interferometer. A sea interferometer, right?
Yes, that's it.
Right.
The sea interferometer, yes. And I observed all that. I was much interested. And I began working on the radio source. And I built a big instrument in Saint-Michel.
Well, let me ask now. So you left the Meudon. You left Meudon when?
I left Meudon to concentrate on the Institute of Astrophysics and on the Institute of Astrophysics and on the Observatoire de Haute-Provence in the south of France.
I see. And what year was that when you?
And because there was a lot of space there, and I could extend an interferometer with 1 kilometer by baseline, and radio links and so on.
Right. What year was this that you did this?
You see, 62, 63, something. You can see the compte-rendu of that in the transaction, in the Observatory of Liège, because it was impossible for me to get money to write my...
For page charters, you mean?
To have my work being printed.
Yeah.
And at that time, I am much indebted to Mr. Paul Swings, who was the chairman of the Astronomical Union at the time. He said, "Oh, Mr. Finner, I will be glad to give the columns of the Observatoire Royal de Liège. You can write your work in Seychelles in it." So, you can look.
Now, when did you leave Meudon?
When I left Meudon, because they had to destroy my Würzburg.
I see.
You see?
Why?
They didn't want to spend money on that.
On radio, I see.
So I went...
In what year was that?
Difficult to say. But
well, about what year?
50 or something.
59 or so?
Oh, no, before.
No.
And when I arrived in one morning and my Würzburg was dismantled, the instruments were lying on the grass.
Without even consulting you?
Yes.
Hmm. But can you just tell me still roughly what year was it? Was it 55? 54,
yes. I can see that in my papers, of course, but
yeah.
It's described in the bulletin de l'Observatoire Royal de Liège.
Yeah, I'll look in there, yeah.
Can
very
you?
Good. So you also went to the 1955 Symposium on Radio Astronomy at Jodrell Bank.
Yes.
Did you not? Can you tell me about that meeting? What memories do you have?
I have memories of the beautiful work of my colleague Lovell. It was wonderful, and of the catalogues of radio sources.
The 2C survey.
Right. It was, for me, it was absolutely beautiful. The Australians were not very glad about it because they were more radio people, and they knew that what has been observed could contain some. Some artifact in it.
Yes, right.
You see?
And they were right, of
and
course.
They were right, yes.
Eventually.
I remember that, the discussions. And in that Jodrell Bank, I remember that my colleagues of Meudon were thinking of building the big radio telescope of Nancy.
Right.
So they didn't want to bother with small things, they were on that big project. And I had nothing to do with it, so I didn't work with them.
I see.
I had only to make my experiments. And in Saint-Michel, you can see on the Liège paper,
right,
that I found some sources that were in my survey and not in the survey of Ryle, and some others that were not in my survey, and that were, I give the tables.
Right.
And that was the beginning. I think it was a little contribution to radio astronomy of the time.
Well, is there anything else that has...
Can you put the
Saint-Michel...
The Saint-Michel
yeah,
work?
Right. It's around 1962. Bulletin
de l'Observatoire Royal de Liège.
Right.
And the title is something like the radio interferometer of l'Observatoire de Saint-Michel.
Now, as you look back over your career and over radio astronomy, do you have any general comments that you might like to say about the way that it has developed?
I think it's very, the developments are extremely interesting. I do not follow really the ordinator, the computer astronomy as it is done now, because it is not in my usual
right
objectives.
But before 1960,
before. Yes, I think they did a lot of very good work. I admire Jodrell Bain and Mullard Observatory.
Which one was that?
Mullard Observatory.
Oh, Mullard at Cambridge.
In Cambridge, right. You see. They did a lot of beautiful work.
Right.
They did first survey, not so good, but second survey, much better.
Right.
Third survey. That's how to build science.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
I am very glad.
Let me just ask you about, during the 1950s, how was it decided whether radio astronomy was going to be mainly in IRSI or in the IAU?
Yes. I know that question. I have been myself the chairman of Commission 5, Commission 6 of IAU on radio, of IRSI on radio astronomy.
Right.
At that time, radio astronomers were mainly engineers. No, really, no one had a very, very large background on astronomy.
Right.
Astronomers were with optics, and radio astronomers were making experiments with radio. And at that time, IRSI was extremely useful to radio astronomers, bringing all the knowledge on radio, fine loud noise receivers,
right,
and so on. And after, the astronomers learned a lot about radio, the essential of the radio that were useful for them.
Right.
And I thought that really it was the job of the IAU to deal with radio,
right,
astronomy.
Now, when did this change take place, do you think?
I can say after the Tokyo meeting of IRSI.
That was 64, 66?
63, 60.
And it was about, well, I'll check anyway. Yeah.
You check.
Yeah.
The Tokyo IRSI,
right,
meeting.
Right.
At that time, we discussed, shall we continue in IRSI or so on? And my opinion was IRSI can continue his commission because it's interesting for astronomers who were in the two commissions, in the Commission 40 and in Commission 6, 40,
right,
in IAU and 6, to continue their exchange of ideas with,
right,
engineers, you see, of radio.
Right.
It was not too early to continue their conversations with radio colleagues.
Right.
Now, as the time glides, I think it's less important to have a lot of work in IRSI.
Yeah.
You see? And as the money is not too large, perhaps we can concentrate on IAU for astronomy.
Right, right. But you must have been one of the few radio astronomers who knew optical astronomy in the 50s.
In the 50s, sure.
Yeah.
Because I was first an amateur.
Right.
Think that I spoke to Flammarion.
Yeah.
I worked with Challenge. He's here, he's 92.
Right.
82.
Is he? I see.
82, you see. Mm. And that was the beginning. I used. They didn't do quite a lot about photocell.
Right.
They knew nothing about a receiver. You see? And that was very interesting at that time to get someone with knowledge. And for having someone with knowledge in radio and also in optics.
Right.
The parabolas in Saint-Michel came from an optical
analogy.
Analogy.
Yeah.
I was toying, as you say, toying,
right,
with two cylindric lens.
Right.
And I crossed them, and in the cross part, It was like a round lens.
Yeah.
You see? And I had the idea of I must do that in radio.
I see.
I have a cylinder parabola, and an array. That's exactly also the same as a cylinder parabola. If I cross the two,
right,
I shall have point.
Right.
And I had it.
But this is similar to the Mills cross idea, is it not?
Ah, not at all. Not, no. Ask Mills, it's not the same.
How is it different?
The idea of Mills, it's not, it's only two lines.
Yeah.
Large cross. It gives a point.
Right.
Point source with, but with very little energy.
Very low collecting area.
Oh, yes. The collecting area,
right,
is just perhaps a hundredth,
right,
of the.
And so with these cylindrical paraboloids, you have much more.
50% or more.
Right.
You see. And that's interesting when you can. I was the first in Europe to look at the 3C9 on that wavelength.
I see.
Yes.
Which wavelength was it?
One meter.
Yeah.
One meter. I had really, with that simple instrument, very good results and a lot of fine sources. And so.
Well, thank you very much.
So that ends the interview with Lafeneur on 30th August 76.